We've been going for the past 3.5 years or so. We've been studying the life of Jesus. And so what I want to do today, as we celebrate Mother's Day, is to focus on Jesus' relationship with his mother, Mary. I think you'll agree that Mary exemplifies virtues that are common to mothers of every age. More importantly, Mary, she gives us these glimpses into this mysterious and marvelous and challenging role that we call motherhood. What we know about Mary, the mother of Jesus, is found in several brief vignettes that we find in the Bible. And so today I'd like to look at 5 different ones. The first one is actually found in Luke's gospel, and it comes even months before Jesus is born. You see, according to Luke, the angel Gabriel, he comes and he visits Mary and he tells her, "Do not be afraid, Mary. You have found favor with God. You will conceive and give birth to a son, and you are to call him Jesus." And now Mary, being the teenager, most people say somewhere around 13 years old, being this teenager, she reacts how you might expect her to. She says, "How will this be, since I am a virgin?" So the angel answers, and the angel says, "The Holy Spirit will come on you, and the power of the Most High will overshadow you. So the Holy One to be born will be called the Son of God. Even Elizabeth, your relative, is going to have a child in her old age. And she who was said to be unable to conceive is in her 6th month. For no word from God will ever fail. I am the Lord's servant," Mary answered. "May your word to me be fulfilled." And then the angel left her. You see, long before Jesus even took his first breath, long before she had any idea what she was in store for, Mary began preparing a place in her heart for Jesus. There was a child, and the child once asked his mother, "Mommy, where was I before I was born?" And the mother responds, and she says, "Well, sweetheart, you were a thought in the mind of God," and she could very well have added, "and a prayer in my heart as well." What's it like to have new life come into being within your body? Now, some of us, we will never know. As a man, I can only marvel at what a woman must experience as she feels this baby begin to grow and to come to life inside her womb and to move and to begin kicking, drawing its strength from her very own life's blood. You see, many of us will never experience that. And yet, every single one of us came into being that way. We will do well to remember that just as our bodies were being nourished in the waters of the womb, so also our souls are being nurtured by the loving thoughts and prayers of our mothers. You see, when it's all said and done, that's what mothers do best. Now, the next vignette that I'd like for us to look at this morning comes 12 years later. It's also found in Luke's gospel. And Jesus and his family, they have made this long pilgrimage all the way to Jerusalem to celebrate the Passover. They travel in a caravan of friends and families. And when they get there, the city, it's crowded because millions of people are all gathering for this celebration. When the celebration is over and they're ready to go home, Jesus, he's busy hanging out with the boys and causing mischief and doing things that boys do best, or at least that's what they thought. You see, they traveled all day. And when they get there in the middle of the evening, to set up camp for the night, Jesus, he is nowhere to be found. Have any of you ever lost a child? Have any of you ever lost a child and would care to share with any of us about it? Wait, can we get a microphone so she can? Wait, here's one. There's one here. I got this one, Tim. Because there's a couple here. Just briefly, if you'd like. You lost a child.
I didn't really lose him. I knew where he was, but we were helping my mother move, and he was about 5 or 6. And he got on the elevator. We weren't ready to get on it, and before I knew what happened, he got on the elevator, pushed a button, the doors closed, and off he went. So not knowing where he was getting off or who would be there, we're all running up and down stairs looking for him. I don't remember where we found him, but we obviously found him again.
Oh, he's here. Okay. Anyone else? Okay. There's a couple of your hands. I'll get around to you.
I had a very similar experience. We were going to a doctor's appointment, and we had pushed the elevator, but we weren't sure if it was, anyway, I don't know, somebody was traveling behind because I had all three of the kids, and Lacey got on, and a bunch of other people got on, and she went up with the elevator, and the other two were here with me, and I, it's like, Lacey, get off, and she couldn't get off quick enough, and so, anyway, she went up with the other people, and it's like, I don't know who those people are. So I leave the two and go, because I said, stay here. And then I went running up and down the stairs because I knew they wouldn't travel. I mean, they were like 3 and 4. No, they must have been 5 or 6 because she was old enough to walk onto the elevator. Anyway, but anyway, so they stayed. But then I, you know, it's like leaving the 99 and going after the one. Uh-huh. Kind of thing. Anyway, I found her. It had gone up and down, and anyway.
She's here, too. Yeah. Okay, Teresa, I'll make my way over there.
Well, before he starts in and tells you, Frankie was lost twice. Once, we were all going to lunch after church in Grants Pass, and I shut the door, and he's standing in behind the mini blinds, looking at us through the window, just laughing, and we're walking off, and I turned around, and he's standing there. I locked him in the church.
He was thinking more about going to lunch.
Right. What were you doing? You left him, too. And the next time was when he was being, you were at the, for your ordination, you were at your meeting, and we were at the, whatever that hotel is in Eugene, and we were all praying, and he was sitting playing beside me. Well, he got up and he toddled off into, wound up in the restaurant. I couldn't find him, and it was all about that time that Geraldo had all those horrific stories about children being taken. I was just panicking. I'm running around, and I looked in the restaurant, and all of a sudden, there we see his little hands reaching up over the top of the table, playing with the salt and pepper shakers and moving stuff around. And that's how I found him. But he was lost twice.
There's a third time that she lost him.
She lost him.
And it was his first Thanksgiving. So he was about 6 months old. And I was out on a call with the sheriff's office, and I came home, and she couldn't find Frankie. And he had rolled underneath a huge peace lily plant and was just laying underneath it, banging the leaves. And she can't find him. The cat told her where he was and looked underneath the plant. Sure enough, he was there just having a good time. But three times she lost my son.
Anyone else? Okay.
One time Betty and I were at Fred Meyer's, Hollywood. And we went into the photography music section, electronics. And Bill was walking in. And she thought I had him, and I thought she had him. And before we knew it, about 20 seconds later, we realized neither one of us had him. Well, he had walked, if you know the new hall at Fred Meyer's over there, it's not new now, but it's probably 15 years old. He had walked out of the electronics store all the way down to the entrance to the food store, and we were scared to death.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay.
Years ago, we lived in the country, and my oldest daughter was learning how to ride a bike with her dad. I was inside baking. Alicia had started it. My youngest had started out in the house with me baking, and it went out to watch them. Well, they're done. It's starting to get dark. They come in. I'm like, "Where's Alicia? I thought she was with you. Well, I thought she was with you. We're out in the country." The coyotes start howling. And
oh, yeah.
And then pretty soon I'm taking off on a bicycle, riding up and down streets in the dark, you know, just yelling. My dog, we had a car that didn't work at the bottom of the hill, and my daughter's like leaning up against it saying, where could she be? And she like looks over, she's sound asleep in the back seat. And then one time I lost my daughter from school. It was a bus driver's fault. She was late getting out the door, so the bus driver said no and told her she couldn't get on the bus. So she walked from Buckman to 28th and Gleason. I had called the police and everything. But she made it home safe just fine, and she knew when she walked through the door she was in trouble because it's like Dad always said, don't worry, Mom.
Anyone else? Okay. Oh, there's hands up all over the place.
Well, I've left kids at church before, and that's okay, because I didn't lose them. I forgot them. I thought Tim had them. Tim thought I had them. And Doug was here happily, just having a good time. So, but I did actually lose a child. We were at Disneyland. Timmy was about 7 at the time. And we were at Tom Sawyer's Island, and they've got, like, this playground structure thing. But we were down a few steps and off a ways. Tim and I were just sitting there resting, and all four of the kids ran off to play. They were having a good time. And we told the older ones, particularly Kirsten, keep an eye on Timmy, don't lose him. And they all came running back down. Where's Timmy? I don't know. Well, go find him. You had him. What'd you do with him? He was gone for probably a good half hour before we found him. So he was smart enough to find somebody and was using their cell phone and calling. And I kept like, I don't know this number. I'm busy. I'm looking for my kid. I kept hanging up on him and not answering. I finally answered, and there's this guy. Are you missing a child? I have a little boy. And he's just like, oh, geez, where are you at? So we ran and found him. So. And from now on, answer your phone, even if you don't know who it is. It might be your child.
That's right. Okay. All right. Okay, we'll get a couple more here. Elizabeth.
So Chris was, this is when we lived in San Rafael, and Chris was about 18 months old. And I had a close friend whose son was about 6 months older, so was a little over 2 years old. And I was babysitting him, and the three of us were in the playground. And I'm kind of looking down in the sandbox where Chris is, and I look up. Alexander is nowhere to be seen. I ran out into the street, and he was in the middle of the street. It scared, I just about died. And thank the Lord, he hadn't been hit by a car, and I was able to get him and pay attention to him. And then another time, I babysat four or five boys who were friends of Chris and Andrew. So we're walking home from Richmond Elementary, and we're about halfway to my house, and one of the boys says, where is Gabe? I looked around. We didn't have Gabe. I didn't have a car at the time, so I had to take all seven boys and me sort of jogging back to school. It was just the worst feeling in the world.
Yeah.
And at that time, the fifth graders got out later than the third graders, so his brother came to his fifth grade brother came down, and I said, I don't know where Gabe is, go find him. And he had waited patiently on the playground.
Oh, wow.
And his brother found him, and I just said, please don't tell your parents. That's not true. I told his parents immediately, but
okay, last one. Go ahead, Melanie.
We also left Delaney at church.
All right.
Kelly called me and said, hey, you're forgetting somebody. But we had Chelsea's graduation party at Mount Tabor Park. And we were all just enjoying the park, and all of a sudden realized Nikki was gone. I looked for about, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes. He was hiding behind a tree.
Intentionally hiding behind a tree?
Yes.
Okay. All right. If you've never lost a child, you can never know exactly what it feels like unless you have. There's a story that this lady told. She's from the UK. And it says, the first moments of panic are horrendous. Bewilderment, mad swiveling of the head, a tightness in the throat, then chest pains, and the ghastly realization that she's talking specifically about her daughter, that there was water everywhere. Where is she? Had Katya been snatched? Had she run into the water? And was she by now already struggling to stay afloat? And if she had simply wandered off, which way did she go, and how long would it take to find her? You'll never know what it's like unless you've lost a child. So imagine what Mary and Joseph felt like when they finally realized that neither one of them have Joseph. They quickly leave the caravan. They make their way back to Jerusalem. 2 days now. And according to Luke, Mary and Joseph, when they get back to Jerusalem, they find Jesus in the temple talking with the elders. They must have breathed a sigh of relief. And then Mary did what any mother would have done. She hugged and kissed her son. And then she gave him a proper scolding. In Luke chapter 2, at verse 48, Mary says to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." See, I don't understand how it is that women, that mothers, have the capacity to reassure and to reprimand their children in the same breath. There are contradictory forces that are at work there. But for a mother, they just simply go hand in hand. She wants to expose her children to the possibilities of the world while at the exact same time protecting them from its dangers. Don't know quite how to explain it other than to say that mothers, they're just like that. Now Mary appears next in Jesus' life in the scene of his very first miracle. And ironically, it's Mary who prompts Jesus into performing his first miracle. The setting is a wedding. It's a wedding party in a little village of Cana in Galilee. And as John tells the story, the wine has failed and this party is about to come to a screeching halt. And Mary steps in and she says, "Don't just stand there, do something." And Jesus says to her, "But Mom." But you see, that's not really how the Bible says it. See, Jesus didn't want to get involved in what it says in John chapter 2 at verse 3. When the wine was gone, Jesus' mother said to him, "They have no more wine." "Woman, why do you involve me?" Jesus replied. "My hour has not yet come." You see, Jesus didn't want to get involved yet, but Mary insisted. And so Jesus, he tells the stewards to fill these purification jars all the way to the very top with water. And then he transformed that water into the most robust, sparkling wine that you've ever tasted. It was his very first miracle. It's easy to say that up to this point, nobody knew the potential that Jesus had, the power that he had, except for his mother. She knew what her son was capable of, probably even better than he knew himself. And when the time was ripe, when the time was ready, she provoked him to act in order to unleash the potential within him. And then the rest is history. It would be the very first of many, many miracles that were performed by Jesus. You see, that's a quality that mothers have that's hard to explain. Like a mother bird who knows that her baby chicks can fly, but they're not going to unless she nudges them. And so with courage, she pushes them over the edge so they don't become too comfortable in the security of her nest. But how does she know that they are able to fly? How does she know that they are strong enough? You see, mothers just know. They have a way of...
Yeah.
The strength, who we are, what we are, comes a lot from our mothers who mold us and strengthen us. One of the most difficult moments for Mary, it comes later on. It was when she got wind of this gossip that was going around that her son was acting irrationally. And in Mark chapter 3 at verse 21, when his family heard about this, they went to take charge of him. For they said, he is out of his mind. And so his friend thinks he's possessed by a demon. And they sought to reason with him, but it became obvious that they weren't going to be able to listen to him. So they sent for his mother and his brothers to come and to take him back to Nazareth. And according to Mark, Jesus is in a house, and he's teaching when he gets word that his mother and his brothers are outside. And here is what he says in Mark chapter 3 at verse 33. Who are my mother and my brothers? Then he looked at those that were seated in a circle around him, and he said, here are my mother and my brothers. Whoever does God's will is my brother and sister and mother. Now, just so we're clear here, Jesus didn't say that Mary wasn't his mother. Instead, he pointed to an even bigger picture. The family circle, it includes all who belong to God. We are brothers and sisters through faith. He didn't deny his relationship with his mother, but he did set up the limit of her authority. He made it clear that he was accountable only to God, and it was up to Mary to step aside. Now, that must be one of the hardest things that any mother has to do, and that is to relinquish control, to let their child make his or her own decisions, to let your child make his or her own mistakes, and then to be there, entrust the child to the world, and in this case, that would be to say, entrust the child to God, and then to be brave enough not to stand in the way. Frankly, some mothers are more graceful at letting go than others, and some, they never really let go at all. But those who do, those who do so, they do so in faith and with every hope that in giving up the parental role, that they may in turn become friends. See, Mary, she had the courage to let go. She took a back seat because after this episode, which seems to have occurred early on in Jesus' ministry, we don't hear another word about Mary until the day that Jesus was hung on a cross and crucified. That's not to say that Jesus never saw his mother again. It is to say that her role was to become one of his many followers. At the appropriate time, Mary stepped aside. She allowed her little boy to become a man. After all, she was his mother and not his God. It's for mothers to know the difference. Now, the final scene in Jesus' relationship with Mary, it comes on the hill of Golgotha as he hangs on a cross. Mary is there, of course, standing at the feet of the cross. You can imagine the anguish that she felt watching her son as he hangs there. He's suffering. She's unable to lift a finger or to do anything to help him. And there standing beside Mary is his beloved disciple, And in those last moments, in John chapter 19 at verse 26 and 27, it says, when Jesus saw his mother there and the disciple whom he loved standing nearby, he said to her, "Woman, here is your son." And to the disciple, "Here is your mother." From that time on, the disciple took her into his home. It was one final act of devotion to entrust the care of his mother to his closest friend. He knew that John would provide for her, that John would protect her in his absence, and in turn, Mary would become the mother to John, a mother figure. And sure enough, she went with him to Ephesus, where she lived a long life, and she served as a model of faith and devotion in the development of the early church. This is a story I want to read for you. It's from Irma Bombeck, who is an American author and humorist. And she writes, "While the good Lord was creating mothers, he was into his sixth day of overtime when the angel appeared and said, 'You're doing a lot of fiddling around with this one.' And the Lord said, 'Have you read the specs on this order? She has to be completely washable, but not plastic. Have 180 movable parts, all replaceable. Run on black coffee and leftovers. Have a lap that disappears when she stands up. Have kisses that can cure anything, from a broken leg to a disappointed love affair. And have 6 pair of hands.' The angel shook its head slowly and said, 6 pair of hands? Not possible. It's not the hands that are causing my problem, says the Lord. It's the 3 pair of eyes that a mother has to have." "That's on the standard model?" asked the angel. The Lord nodded. "One pair that sees through closed doors when she asks, 'What are you kids doing in there?' when she already knows." Another, here in the back of her head, that sees what she shouldn't see, but what she has to know. And of course, the ones that are in the front, that can look at a child when the child goofs up and reflects, "I understand and I love you," without even uttering a single word. "Lord," said the angel as he's touching the Lord's sleeve, "come to bed, perhaps tomorrow." "I can't," said the Lord. "I've come so close to creating something like myself. Already I have one that heals herself when she is sick, can feed a family on 1 pound of hamburger, and can get a 9-year-old to stand under a shower." The angel circled the model of the mother very slowly. "It's too soft," the angel sighed. "But tough," said the Lord excitedly. "You cannot imagine what this mother can do or endure." "Can it think?" asked the angel. "Oh, not only think, it can reason and compromise," said the Creator. Finally, the angel bent over and ran its finger across the cheek. "There's a leak," the angel said. "I told you that you're trying to put too much into this model. You can't ignore the stress factor." The Lord moved in for a closer look, and he gently lifted a drop of moisture to his finger where it glistened and sparkled in the light. "It's not a leak. It's a tear." "A tear?" asked the angel. "What's it for?" "Well, it's for joy, sadness, disappointment, compassion, pain, loneliness, and pride." "You're a genius," said the angel. The Lord looked somber, and he whispered, "But I didn't put it there." Mother's Day. It's about our moms. Our moms who are mighty. Our moms who are strong. Our moms who help to mold us and to shape us and to make us who we are. Watch this other video. Okay, maybe don't watch. Oh, no, you're right.
There are those who say that this is ordinary. but don't let that fool you. Mother will always be the bravest, least ordinary, most difficult, utterly challenging career that anyone ever hopes to lay claim to. While others might hear, diaper changer, food maker, laundry doer, carpooler, bottle washer, sweatpants wear, life on hold, wanna be doing anything else, woman. The truth is, whether it feels like it some days or not, you are in fact a shelter from the storm. You are a cape of good hope. You are a warrior who will do battle for your children's hearts, souls, attention, innocence, education, and memories. Go to battle, my friends. This is your time. We will hold strong on either side of you. We will pray for those bottles through the dark watches of the night. And when doubt comes and children break, when adults fail them, and when they push and push as hard against us as the day we deliver them into this world, we will not be broken. We may ache and see cracks tear through our hearts, but we will get up again tomorrow, and we will load the clothes and the words that need to be said again and again and again. And when the world tries to claw at them, to break them, to smash the beauty in them, may our walls hold true. May the lessons we've told, the truths we've lived, the life we've spoken into them come back easily, predictably, with wash and repeat ease. Kingdom business, Jesus work, this shaping of souls, this raising tiny humans. There are those that say this is ordinary. Don't buy it for a second. Mighty. You are mighty because you, Mother.
When we talk, when we do Father's Day, there's something strong and bold about it. But in Mother's Day, it's loving, it's tender, it's compassionate. For you mothers out there, whether it's by choice or an accident, whether you are a mother by birth or by marriage, whether you're a mother simply because there are kids that you helped to raise, thank you. Six and a half years ago, my mom passed away, and I miss her. And I've talked often, the kids are going to come in, so I've talked often about dads and how my dad wasn't around and stuff. My mom was around. And even on top of that, when Lisa and I have traveled around, God has brought women into my life to be mother figures for me and to help me and things like that. But I've been doing some looking around these past couple weeks. We were with Tim and Haley this past week, and she says her mom does not like Mother's Day because her mom passed away a couple of years ago and doesn't even want to acknowledge it. So today, Tim and Haley are going to go over there, and she got her mom some really nice little gifts to try to brighten her day. For some, Mother's Day is tough simply because your moms are gone. Sorry. Know that you are loved, and we'll be praying for you. Another one was on the plane yesterday, our last flight from Los Angeles to here. And we were all seated in different areas. Well, we're seated kind of in a general area, but not together. And I got an aisle seat. I don't know how I was so lucky, but I got an aisle seat. And sitting next to me was a lady, and she had a little baby with her, maybe 2 years old, just starting to talk. And then a daughter that was older in there. The baby just did not want to cooperate a whole lot and was kind of fidgety and hungry. And so I kind of pushed on Lisa's chair and pushed on Lisa's chair and pushed on Lisa's chair. She was ignoring me as all get out. She must have thought the girl behind her was pushing the chair. But finally I got her attention and I was able to get some crackers. And through the whole flight, this mother was very patiently and gently trying to keep her daughter quiet. If you've ever traveled with kids, you know, on a plane or anything like that, you know it's tough. And she kept apologizing to me, and the girl kept, you know, pulling on my shirt, wanting to say hi and little things like that. And I'd say hi to her and stuff. Very, very polite about it, stuff like that. But I could see I don't know how to say this, the stress and the frustration that was on the mother's face. I said, don't worry about it. It's all fine and things like that. And in trying to help her out and doing things. Being a mom is not easy. For those of you who are, you do a wonderful job. Keep it up. The third one, a couple weeks ago, we went up to my brother's house. Not really a planned thing and stuff like that. We went up there, and Lisa and I were there, and then Lenny showed up with mom and dad. And they get there, and the bunch of them are sitting around at the dining room table, and they're talking and stuff like that. And some of us are in the living room, and we're doing things. And I walk into the room. The dining room area, and I'm standing there, and Lisa's mom is sitting in front of me, and she says, "This is my youngest son." Man, that meant so much. Because if you know what I was like when I was younger, to hear that, it's an amazing thing. For her to say, "This is my youngest son." Moms are like that. Doesn't matter what you do. Doesn't matter how rotten, how mean you are, they love you. They always will.